humor can kind of catch you no matter where you are on a spectrum from sucky to awesome. And it can move you up that spectrum. So it can take a situation that's awful and make it better. It can also take a situation that's good and make it fantastic. So in that sense, it's not just a remedial thing that fixes what's broken. It's also an amplifier that captures what's great.
I'm Lily Percy, and this is Creating Our Own Lives, Cool for Short, the podcast where I ask people to think through how they shape their lives. And hopefully by listening, we learn how to create our own. This season on Cool, we're talking about humor as a tool for survival. Humor is a big part of how I communicate with my family. It's often dark and morbid, sometimes gross and silly, but it gives us the framework to understand and relate to each other. And it's the same for Maureen Craig. As a parent, a wife, a daughter, and a kick-ass brand strategy executive, Mo believes that there's always something you can make a joke about. So tell me, when you were growing up, who was the person that made you laugh the most?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, looking in broad context, I have to say, and this is a bit of a cheat, but the answer would be my family. I've got this large, wild Irish family, and humor in our family, I think, was just part of how we did what we did. And I would say part of it is that people in my family tend toward eccentricity. So just their being is in and of itself funny. And then also, like, my mom and my dad both have whip smart senses of humor. Just when I was a kid, my mom, you know, is an avid reader and a professional writer, and she would leave copies of The New Yorker all over the house. And I remember at 5 and 6 looking at the cartoons and seeing, you know, which ones I could figure out. And it was that central to our lives, I think, as kids, and even, you know, watching the Carol Burnett Show.
Oh, yeah.
As a kid, those sorts of comedy experiences were really, really fundamental. But rather than a single person, I would just say it's this strange, peculiar family that I call mine.
Did you watch Carol Burnett together as a family?
Absolutely. And, you know, like, take an image kind of right out of central casting of mom and dad on the couch, and dad's got a big bottle of beer and mom is sitting and there are 4 kids on the floor. And it was that together as a family. It was Carol Burnett, the Bob Newhart Show, and MASH. and All in the Family as well. And both my parents were Jesuit educated, which I think gives a person, just in my own limited experience, it gives a person a really wide and encompassing worldview. And so humor sort of plays into that in ways that are always unexpected. But it was just part of how we did what we did. You know, we weren't a sports family. We didn't go to Dodger games every weekend. We weren't like that, but we were it was funny. Not in a competitive sense, but seeing the humor in things was part of how we were. My dad used to say, I could be shoveling shit in a 60-mile-an-hour wind and find something about it I liked. And I really think that's true. I think that that's something that he passed on to us.
It was so embedded in your family, it sounds like, that it was just – I love that you say it's not competitive, because there is a sense sometimes when everyone is funny that you're always trying to one-up each other. But it sounds like the dynamic wasn't like that.
Yeah, not at all. It's a kind of a classic Irish thing where storytelling is part of how we were as a family. And so that brings with it embellishments and exaggerations that would, you know, turn your hair blue, but also a love of those moments in a story that just stop you dead and make you laugh. You know, my mom, for instance, tells this really funny story. When we were growing up, and I must have been, I don't know, 3 or 4, and she worked in an advertising agency in Los Angeles, kind of back when advertising was really super cool. And so she went out with some friends after work one night and stayed out and had some drinks and basically came home late. And this was before there were cell phones and whatnot. And so she didn't want my dad to be upset that she was out late and hadn't called. And so as she's driving home down Wilshire Boulevard in the wood-paneled station wagon that we use to drive across the country, she reaches into her purse, rolls down the window, and throws every coin in her purse onto the middle of Wilshire Boulevard as she's driving home so that she has a legit excuse for why she didn't call. And so I just picture that moment in my head, those two frames of film of this middle-aged woman driving a station wagon down Wilshire Boulevard at midnight on a Tuesday, throwing quarters onto the sidewalk.
That's totally an I Love Lucy moment, I have to say.
It's an I Love Lucy moment, but that was how we lived. I mean, that was just how we lived. Or the time when, you know, my mom, we're home on a Saturday, and my mom gets a call from the PBS station in L.A. that says, "Mrs. Craig, congratulations, you've still got the lead bid." And she says, "Still got the lead bid?" And the guy says, "For the London double-decker bus." And she's like, "What the heck?" My dad had seen on PBS they were having some kind of an auction, and he bid on a bus, a London double-decker bus, $5,000. And even looking back, you know, something like that could fracture a marriage because it's about how we manage our money, and that's one of the things that does fracture marriages. But in our case, it just becomes this funny story that we tell when we get together.
It's so interesting, too, that you mentioned MASH and All in the Family. Two shows that I think about that had at the heart of them, like, really hard issues they were dealing with. And yet there was humor at the center. That was the way they dealt with what was going on. And it's one of the reasons why I'm so fascinated about how humor is a tool for survival for people. And I think, especially MASH, I think about how humor was used in that show to cope with death and the Korean War. And I just wonder, how has humor been a tool for survival for you? I mean, as you've, in your family, and then as you continue to grow up.
It's been a huge one. And it's funny because I was thinking about this on the car coming here. Humor can kind of catch you no matter where you are on a spectrum from sucky to awesome. And it can move you up that spectrum. So it can take a situation that's awful and make it better. It can also take a situation that's good and make it fantastic. So in that sense, it's not just a remedial thing that fixes what's broken. It's also an amplifier that captures what's great. And when I just think about it across the spectrum of my life, humor is central to how I parent and how I talk to my kids, finding the humor in things and being able and willing to let your guard down and laugh. You know, laughing with my kids at my own expense, I think, has been really important because it helps us build a relationship that I think will last over time.
So I'm so fascinated that you mentioned parenting when you're talking about how you use it as a tool. And clearly it was a huge part of your childhood and your family. So what did you bring consciously into your parenting with your own four kids?
We started having our kids. My oldest turned 21 yesterday. Yay! And so we started having our kids before the phrase helicopter parent had been coined, but when it was setting its ugly roots into society. And so at a time when kids went from playing to play dates, that was right about when we had our first. And when all toys became sort of structured and educational. And our approach, my husband and I, as parents, was more along the model of free-range chickens, of just kind of letting the kids be. And yeah, we sent them to camp and we, you know, wanted to teach them all an instrument and a foreign language and all those wonderful things. We're not like anti-education parents by any stretch. I don't mean to paint it that way. But we consciously tried to not overly cloister our kids. And so one of the first ways that we started to sort of find our parenting style was by embracing the bad mom and bad dad kind of motif and having fun with it. You know, where he might call home from work, and at that time, you know, I was working from home, and he'd say, "What are you doing?" And I'd say, "Oh, I'm spending the next 30 minutes ignoring the kids." And he would just say, "Okay, let me know if anybody's bleeding." And it was just part of our sort of repartee.
And they would hear that, so they were
They would hear
of it.
That, absolutely. Yeah. And there's something nice about how humor, even with a 4 or 5-year-old, like they'll pick up on the nuances, and they pick up on when you're treating them in the same way you would treat a peer. And so I think in that sense, it's kind of useful because it establishes new ground for parents and kids to relate on that isn't just parent-kid. And I think I try to avoid overt sarcasm because I find it's laced with meanness that isn't what I want the culture of my home to be like. You know, I don't want snappy or hard edge rejoinders being slung back and forth between us, either among my kids or between us and the kids. So I consciously try to avoid sarcasm. In this electoral cycle, it's been a real challenge.
Yeah, no kidding.
we work at that.
So I'm curious that this is a two-parter for you. Prepare yourself.
Oh, okay.
So how would you say, and I think you've been talking about this all along, but how would you say that humor's formed you as a person, as a human being? And then what about it are you most grateful for?
Oh, that's a good two-parter. All right. How has it formed me? I think the impact it's had on me, and I don't mean to sound like I think I'm a fully formed person because I don't. You know, my Play-Doh hasn't gotten dried and crackly around the edges yet. I'm on a journey. But I think the way it's formed me at its essence has made me listen and notice others with the desire for intimacy, I think, to really want to notice and see and experience what makes another person tick and what makes them them. Because when I think about the humor that is funniest and the humor that does the most for me as a person, it's humor that always turns on or in some way pivots on an insight that is deeply true, not just superficially true.
Mm.
And so I think humor attunes you to look for that, to people watch, to notice gestures, to pay close attention. And then I think the thing that I am most grateful for is that by hook or by crook, I seem to have surrounded myself with people where my use of humor is valued. And it's an easy give and take and a part of how I relate to the people who are closest to me.
Hmm.
And so I feel like that part of me, I am so grateful that other people around me have helped let it flourish, you know, that they've seen value in it. And for instance, early on thanked me for it.
Hmm.
That really matters. And then just I would say the other thing I'm grateful for is that it really does help keep your sanity.
Yes.
I mean, on a simple, very transactional level, like it just really – like I'll play this stupid game with myself. And I know it's stupid. There are things we do that we know are just absurd.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm in a really bad situation for whatever reason – like I travel a lot internationally and sometimes you're there at the airport. Your flight's been canceled. You're going to miss your meeting. You know, the next three flights are booked. You don't have a hotel and you can't find one. This all happened to me, interestingly, at Newark Airport. I would have preferred it happening in Mumbai because it's actually more organized. But regardless, there I am at Newark Airport. And I'm standing in line for a cab. The line is, I kid you not, 400 yards long. And so it's angry Newark people standing in line at night. There are no cabs. There are no Ubers. The line, I've spent 2 hours now in the line. And I say to myself, well, let's count our blessings. What are the good things? And I'm like, okay, I'm wearing comfortable shoes. That's good news. I'm not too cold. I'm not too hot. That's good news. My cell phone battery's fine, so I can play, you know, Bejeweled. Also good news. And then it starts to rain.
Oh, no.
It's like, well, shoot. And so then you get to see this kind of Shakespearean drama play out as all these people just go bonkers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just go crazy because their patience is stretched and they're miserable and they're angry and now they're getting wet. And
exactly.
Newark rain is not a pretty rain. It's not a London rain. Like, it, you know, it's going to make your hair fall out and give you cancer. And so you're standing there in Newark and it's starting to rain. And I'm just like, well, at least things just got more entertaining.
Yeah.
Like now I can look at people around me coming unglued. And then I wound up forming this little kind of cadre of three people and we were all kind of in line together standing there. You look like a doofus when you're holding your briefcase over your head, like that's going to make a difference. And as the rain picks up, we just start laughing.
Mm.
And, you know, there was nothing else you could do. So
yeah.
On that very basic level, you know, humor is that coping mechanism that even when you get to the end of your list of things that are good, And when you bottom out on that list and there's nothing else, there's always something you can make a joke about. There always is.
Maureen Craig is a brand consultant and the founder of Mo Strategy. I first met Mo when she did audience research for the other show that I work for, On Being, and I knew that I liked her the moment she used a photo of Meryl Streep to illustrate an important point. Creating Our Own Lives is produced by Maya Tarrell, Chris Hegel, and Trent Gillis, and is an On Being Studios production. You can listen and subscribe on iTunes or wherever you download podcasts. And leave us a review on iTunes. It matters more than you think. I'm Lily Percy. Thanks for listening.